Hello there, my name is Dan Ward from gak.co.uk, and we are here for another edition of Desert Island Synths with Mr. Marcus Fuller.
Hello, Dan.
No screwdriver in your hand today, Marcus.
Not today.
Okay, so you're all washed up.
Washed up.
In the proverbial sense, this is desert. This is a Desert Island podcast.
Okay.
It wasn't. That was no. There was no slight intended there, personal or otherwise. So you're on your beautiful desert island.
Mm-hmm.
You're all alone.
Okay.
The sea lapping against your feet.
Nice.
What's missing from this island?
No music.
Synthesizers. So you're allowed 6 synthesizers and 1 wild card piece of equipment. On your desert island, you have power. Power's a given, as is your sound system, as is a sound system. So what, pray tell, would you take with you to have on your island? Number 1.
6. Oh, number 1.
All right, well, yeah.
No,
yeah.
Six synths?
Six synths.
Number 1 has got to be the Moog Modular 55.
Moog Modular 55. Is a fine choice.
Mm-hmm.
A behemoth of a synth.
Yep, a dream synth.
Indeed. What's the... When did you first come across said machine?
When did I come across this one, or when did I first know about them?
When did it first enter your heart?
Oh, well, in the olden days, you would often see them in magazines and things of... famous artists.
Mm-hmm.
And coming from electronics, I used to just look at it and think, oh, it's just so many buttons and wires and cables and all the fiddly bits that I kind of enjoy.
Indeed. And often seen behind a 1 Jean-Michel Jarre in press photographs and interviews and so on and so forth.
This of course. My idol.
One of his stalwart synthesizers over the years. And I see we have one blinking away in the background here.
Yes.
So how did you come across this particular one?
Well, the trouble is with a synthesizer like this, it's something that you kind of dream of owning, but you know deep down inside there's probably not a chance you're going to get one.
Mm-hmm.
And I was actually helping Jason Organaut, who entertains around the old people's homes and retirement homes. I was helping him to pack away his equipment, and you rang me up and said, guess what we've got in the shop? You're not going to believe this. And my brain just automatically said, this is a chance of a lifetime. There is no way one of these is going to turn up ever again.
Indeed.
And it's a reissue.
Yes.
And, you know, you get one of those... Sometimes in life, you just get something that says, yes, get it. And that's what happened.
Well, very rarely is the soul wrong in these decisions.
Yeah, I just kind of thought, yeah, okay, a little bit expensive, but, you know, we only live once. And there would be no way something like this would ever turn up again. And like you say, you know, you see this, you think Jean-Michel Jarre's got one, I want one.
Mm-hmm. A solid investment as well.
Oh, yes. It's, I think so.
One of only 35, or is it 50? I think 55 in the world.
And there's 35 reissues, and there's 150 modular 15 reissues.
Indeed.
So, yeah, there's only 55 of those. The only other person I know in England that's got one of the reissues is Ty Unwin, who, as you know, is an amazing composer.
Indeed.
Does a lot of television music and things. And, I'm really happy and very fortunate to get one.
This is not the first of the Moog reissues to have appeared on a desert island since lately, I recently recorded one with Mel Wesson, and he put the Model 15 reissue
Yes.
On his list over the original Model 50. So Moog obviously doing an amazing job with the anniversary reissues of these synths. A true beauty to the behold. Quite imposing, inspiring, in equal measure, I guess. Sonically, it's a monster.
It is. And one thing I really love about this machine, because you can't save any settings unless you take photographs and things. Mm-hmm. But one of the wonderful things about this is every time I go to it and I think, I want this type of sound, you're not going to get it. Something completely, well, I wouldn't say completely different, but something else will start to appear whilst you're experimenting to try and get the sound that you're actually after. And you will keep dropping into little slots of, ooh, that's nice. Ooh, I could use that. Mm. Or, you know.
Well, it's, I hear exactly what you're saying. It reminds me of an idea where we are, you're not so much a musician with this, you're an operator, and you're operating the synth and its characteristics rather than playing it, if you like.
Yeah, I'm not the greatest musician, that's true. But I love the experimentation of just making sound and, you know, playing around with music, and every now and again something interesting pops up. But I've never actually made any money out of music. But that doesn't matter. That's not what's important to me.
Well, it's always interesting to look at these things from a point of view of an engineer, if you like, rather than a musician. A different perspective on these things is, it's always interesting to see. So have you been at it with your screwdriver yet? I can see we do have a panel missing from the front there.
Yeah, well, on the 55 reissue, there is one blank panel.
Indeed.
And that kind of, it kicks into your OCD to say, it's not quite 100% there. I need something. There's got to be something in that panel. So what I'm going to do is put a quantizer in there.
Voltage quantizer for the sequencer.
A voltage quantizer, yeah. Because it is a little bit difficult sometimes to get a note spot on with the potentiometers.
Indeed.
So a quantizer is going to help somebody like me to try and at least hit a note in the right place.
Wonderful. So there we have it. Number one, the Moog Modular 15. So
55.
55, sorry. We can edit that out. So you went big.
Yes.
You went big to start with. So where do we go? Where do we go next?
Well, next, I think it's got to be, it's a new instrument, it's not been around very long, is the Montage by Yamaha.
Indeed.
And the reason for that is I like orchestral music.
Mm-hmm.
And the Montage gives me very good sounding instruments from, you know, an orchestra. But also, you've got the FM engine in there. And just like the DX7, which, I mean, I've owned three or four DX7s in the past, even though they're quite difficult to sort of program and get your head around, this is just a little bit easier to just touch away at the screen and get those wonderful old 80s FM sounds out of it with not a lot of effort.
The Montage, I wholly underestimated when I first encountered it. It is obviously Yamaha's flagship synthesizer. I was surprised that it only incorporated AWM and FM. But then once you spend a little bit of time with it, you can see that this is the alpha and omega of that breed of synthesizer. So it is everything that the Moog isn't, and sonically it has a depth and a overall It is so powerful as a synthesizer. It's I can't imagine going further with that SNS based synth engine or indeed an FM engine. So it certainly makes an excellent counterpart to the 55. And yeah, sonically, I'm absolutely, like I said, I think to a certain extent at first, I underestimated it, and it is an incredible, incredibly powerful piece of kit.
Well, that's why those two synthesizers are together on the stand there, and it's sort of built in that way. That's my go-to sit down. The Montage is there, and the 55 is directly above it, and that gives me such a huge palette to play with. But yeah, I agree. When the Montage came out, I sort of looked at a few of the videos and things, and everyone tended to go on about the, oh, it's got this super knob, which, in honesty, I thought, oh God, what the hell have they put that on there for? A super knob, it blends from one thing to another. However, I have come to realize just how powerful that is when you plug in an FC7 pedal to control it. It's pretty amazing. I think now I was the fool for thinking what a silly thing they'd put on a synthesizer there.
Indeed, it basically allows you to tie any parameters from any part of any of the internal synth engines and manipulate across. So like you can use it for more anything from morphing to crossfading. You could use it for changing a bass sound into a string sound across its range.
Yeah, and there's one particular patch in there that I kind of enjoy. It starts off with a choir at the bottom end and blends through to strings and then goes into the biggest sort of cathedral church organ, all in just the swing of a pedal. And it's it's quite amazing, I think.
So we've bookended, almost bookended synthesis in many ways, going from one of the classic archetypal large-scale modulars to an ultra-modern, purely digital, not even any analog modelling or string, no modelling in there whatsoever.
No.
So there's from one end to the other there. So between these mighty bookend synthesizers, what else would you take? What would be your number three? So we've got number one, the 55, number two, the Montage. So number three.
Well, number three has got to be the Arturia Matrix Brute. It weighs a ton. It's not something that you can just pick up and carry under one arm. Well, not for me anyway.
You're not going to be making a raft with any of these synths, are you?
I don't know. I think with the 55, you could make a handy little canoe to go out fishing.
Indeed. I suppose if you had the shipping cart and you could...
I've kept the shipping cartons.
For firewood, maybe. I don't know. But yeah, these are all heavy, heavy boards that we're talking about.
They certainly are.
And obviously the Arturia, relatively new synth from... the Matrix Brute, relatively new synth from Arturia. So what jumps out at you about this particular synth?
Well, I had the Maplin 5600 synthesizer a long time ago, and it arrived in quite bad state, and I managed to get it all together and working. And one thing that stood out with that was the pin matrix. Mm-hmm. You know, you just slot a pin in, and you've connected this to that and whatever. And when this Matrix Brute turned up, I looked at it and I instantly just thought, oh, brilliant, it's got the pin thing. You can do wonderful things. You can connect this to that, to the other, etc., etc. And I kind of looked at it already with the knowledge of how it worked. It sort of said, yeah, don't open in the instruction manual. Mm. It speaks for itself. But one of the main things about this as well is the quality of construction. You know, it's heavy, it's got lots of metal, it's got wood ends, and everything feels solid on it. But there's many reasons for buying this, is the inputs and outputs on the back.
Indeed.
Because, you know, it's got all these CV and gates and everything. And I can just connect this directly to the 55. And it's like they go together. You know, you can do things on this Matrix Brute, patch the cables out into the 55, and it's, it speaks for itself. That some of the stuff that it'll do is incredible, the way they just simply talk to each other. And I like that. It's a well-designed synthesizer. The guys who's put this together are incredible, because you can just patch all these little controllers to anything and anywhere.
Mm-hmm.
It's easy to use. I've not looked at the instruction manual for this yet.
It looks a lot more complex than it is once you understand the notion of how the Matrix system works.
It does. It scares you. There's all these buttons and controls and things, and you look at it and you think, oh my God. But it is actually, it's simple to use.
Indeed. And the guys out in at Archeria in Grenoble have definitely taken it to the next level in terms of the quality of the fit and finish of the unit, and the overall build and fidelity of it. The whole team have done an excellent job, it's fair to say.
Yeah, and of course, I think I've learnt more off Mark Doty. He's done an incredible set of videos,
mm-hmm,
on just about everything that this machine does, and I think he's still doing them at the moment. And I subscribe to him and I watch his videos and I think, oh, brilliant, thanks, Mark, because I don't like reading instruction manuals if somebody else is doing it.
Yeah, indeed, myself had the opportunity of looking one of these up to one of the Moog reissues, and straight away it was simple and intuitive to use, and they sang along together absolutely beautifully. But that aside, the fidelity of the unit itself has certainly come up from where Archeria were. Obviously, the difference between a €300 synthesizer and the Matrix Brute is significant, and they have certainly filled that financial gap with all the quality you would expect for a synth of its size, presence, and price point. And once again, very, very impressed with the overall package of what they've done there. So, okay. So, Modular 55, Montage, Matrix Brute. Where do we go from here?
I'm afraid I'm still going to have to stick to modern instruments. I mean, if you can count the 55 as a modern instrument, because it's a reissue.
Mm-hmm,
but
mm-hmm.
The System 8 from Roland.
Right, indeed.
Now, that is light, and I can pick that up and put it under one arm. It'll be great on the desert island to just go for a walk with it.
It is the antithesis of all of the other synths. It's a very, very lightweight piece of kit. But sonically?
Sonically, I love it. I miss the Jupiter 8. I used to have a Jupiter 8, and I miss that. And this, do you know, it some of the sounds are very close. I can't compare, because I haven't got a Jupiter 8 to compare with it, but the fact that you can just press one of the plug-out buttons, you've got your Jupiter 8
mm-hmm.
sounds. Press another one, you've got the Juno 106. And the System 8 on its own without those is quite an amazing keyboard, to me, anyway.
Indeed, yeah. I was very impressed with when it came out in its System 1 iteration, the actual basic audio engine of it. Sounds like an old analog synth. It did something that I've not really heard in virtual analog since its inception. Obviously, virtual analog is great for that reach out and touch, grab a knob and it does something and it behaves like an analog synth. But yeah, there was still something tacitly missing from the sound. And for me, the System 1 engine really did. It didn't sound like a modern virtual analog. It sounds like an old analog synth. It does weird stuff like an old analog synth. It has a lot of texture and a lot of depth, rather than that kind of often plastic wrapped, vacuum packed kind of impression of analog that so many VA synths do. So a big fan of the actual system engine. Is it the same? Is it the same engine as in the System One? Do we know, or is
well, it's yes. Basically, it's the same sort of engine, but you've got two or three processors doing the work instead of the one that the System One had. This has got three in it,
yeah.
And that opens it up sonically. Well, yeah, just makes it better than the System One. The keyboard alone is a much better keyboard. I didn't like the keyboard on the System One.
Yes.
I like the machine. The machine itself was fine. But the keyboard, I really wanted to just saw it off. And
it was that low-profile, non-touch sensitive.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think there was a... I think that it bothered as many people as it didn't because of the nature of it. Because the people that wanted to play it, it bothered. But obviously, none of the instruments that it was emulating were velocity sensitive, and it was more of a trigger device than a keyboard per se, especially without the traditional pitch bender modulation wheels.
Yeah.
So I think it was a little bit Marmite, but they've certainly cured that with this version. And the and there's additional slots for more models coming in future. So what would you like to see underneath Plug Out 3 when it becomes available for you?
Plug Out 3. Well, I like the SH stuff, but that's already out. Yeah. I just haven't gotten around to actually purchasing one yet because I haven't scratched the surface of what this has already got in it.
Indeed.
But some of the sounds I like. I've noticed Jaw in his concerts. I have to keep speaking about Jean, but I'm his biggest fan. In his concerts, his System 8 is there directly in front of him. Front center, yeah. And the last time I saw him, I thought, oh, good choice, Jean. Very nice. But what I'm getting to there is just this morning I was playing about with this and I thought, oh, I want to make a sort of a stringy Jean with the phasers type thing. I mean, I've got the small stone phasers up there on the shelf, but with this I just literally in about 5 minutes of just turning a few buttons, there you go, something similar, and then you press the save and it's written. So it's easy to use, it's simple. I like things that are simple.
Blimey, simple with lots and lots of knobs and sliders and flashing lights.
Well, I like a lot of knob per function. I don't like to have to press menu and then go down to something else and then tapping away on little clicky switches going forward and backwards and things. If there's a knob on it that you can just turn, that just makes it so much easier.
So we're probably not going to find any of the classic DX range, for example, in this list.
Well, the DX is in the montage, isn't it?
They do require some menu diving and some patience and knowledge to get the best out of them, that's fair to say. Okay, so there it is, number four, the Roland System 8. So we are... Well, this is... The time is just flying by here. So number five.
Number
what,
five...
What do you fancy?
...is something that I have never owned. I would like to get hold of one. I've had them on my desk to repair, and that's the ARP 2600.
Very good.
I just like the way the whole thing is made, because I've been inside them and I've looked at the circuit boards, and the circuit boards have been hand drawn and then etched and things, and I can sort of see the love of the work that went into that machine. But the few over the years that I've had in to actually repair, I've tried to hold on to them for a little while, say, oh, I'm just waiting for that part. It might be a few days, because secretly I've done the repair in an hour and then I've been playing with it for 3 or 4 days afterwards and thinking, oh, I so want one of these. But the price of them just keeps on climbing.
Yeah, it's never really skyrocketed, is it? But it's always just continued to... on its trajectory, and I've no idea what one would cost these days.
It has a steady rise, the price does for one Ingle condition.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what the prices are now of the 2600s. I kind of forgot about looking for them. Every time I see one on eBay, it's always in the United States or something, and you've got all that those shipping problems. You know, I'm just waiting. One day I will go to a car boot sale and there will be one for £100 and...
5:30 in the morning down at the marina. Somebody will rock correct. Up with a 2600 in the boot.
And say, I don't know what it is, but 100 quid.
Mint condition. 100 Mint. Quid, all yours.
Of course.
just needs this fader replacing.
Yeah, and all the jobs I've done on them, have every single one of them has only been a fader replacement.
Right.
The actual electronics themselves, they've always stood the test of time. But it's just the faders that have needed replacing.
So we've skipped from very modern back to one of the classics since the 2600 by ARP, one of the cornerstones of the Radiophonic Workshop. Countless science fiction noises coming from it. Once again, a very large synth, but very, very different to the System 55.
Yes, it's got its own character, absolutely.
A kind of much more of an experimental synth, perhaps the ARPs. So many of them got skipped, didn't they? Because the workflow on them, you have to know what you're doing to be able to get a sound out of it.
Yeah, that's one of the things with the 2600 is you've got to turn on a few brain cells to actually go from beginning to end and start getting sounds out of it that you was aiming for.
Indeed. Well, we're almost there. This is number 5, the ARP 2600. So number 6, last but not least. What do you fancy?
Well, I've owned 3 of them, and I haven't got one at the moment, and that's the Korg Kronos.
All right.
Now, the Korg Kronos, I particularly like that because of all the different engines in it, and it's got the sequencers and everything else like that. A few little niggles, the fact that you have to turn it on and wait 2 minutes and 8 seconds for it to finally boot up, and it actually runs off an old Atom computer, which is a bit dated now, but it still works. Yes, I'd like to have one of those as well. The only thing is, I want to be picky and say I want the 88 key one with the light touch on them, because I'm a synth player. I'm not a heavy sort of piano keyboard weighted keys type player. So I understand the 88 version has come out with a lighter touch. Is that
I was going to say, Korg have just answered your dreams by releasing an 88 note version that isn't hammer action. It's still a waterfall action, I believe, not synth action, but still a much lighter action. And I do know exactly what you mean, in that I am custodian of Kronos at this time, and it's a 61 key version, and the sonic palette of it is such that it begs for a full size keyboard. You want to go up an octave and down an octave, and the way that you can obviously layer and split all of the sounds and create velocity groups and the various parameters, it begs for a much larger board than the 61. And still is arguably the most powerful workstation out there, this side of a computer with a fully fledged DAW and a host of plugins. They do an amazing job, and sonically as well. It's I've found particularly the orchestral patches incredibly powerful and engaging.
Well, I started off with the Trinity, the Korg Trinity, and I worked
back in the 90s.
It was back in the 90s, yeah. And then the studio version that had the CD burner on it. And that, at the time, was the only synth for me. I just had the one synthesizer, and I moved from one to the other. I think I had the Karma as well. So moving up to the Kronos was easy peasy. Mm. You know, I got the Kronos, I turned it on, I thought, oh, yeah, I know what I'm doing.
Yeah.
Type of thing. But, yeah, I haven't got one at the moment. I kind of sold mine to get a few funds together for the montage. But, yeah, the when I'm on my desert island, please send me an 88 key, light key, Kronos, please.
Or maybe a Kronos with a 88 note controller on the side. Would that suffice?
No.
It lacks the elegance, I guess.
It does. When you have a keyboard, a synth with a keyboard on it, like the System 1, but you've got to actually MIDI out into a keyboard so that you can play more notes and things. It doesn't, I don't know, it just doesn't feel right. That's my OCD. It's got to be all in the one unit. Yeah, it's got to be perfect.
I can understand that. There's an inherent lack of elegance there. Plus, are there even any MIDI cables on the desert island? We've not.
Ah, oh, come on.
There must be a decent Leeds bin. If it's anything like my Leeds bin, though, it'll be every lead apart from the one that I need.
Yeah, I've got plenty of cable bins like that. Indeed. Where you pull one cable out and the whole lot follows.
Indeed. Like a monster. So the Korg Kronos. So a pretty complete. It's a pretty satisfying system, actually, there, really. The Kronos, the 2600, the System 8, the Matrix Brute, the Yamaha Montage, and the Modular 55. So. Yeah, it's kind of a gap between then and now, but I guess the synths, the classic synths that you've chosen, kind of speak for themselves in terms of their longevity and their sonic fortitude, whereas the new ones have a flexibility and that makes the system complete. Well, that's an interesting list. So what would your other item be that you would take with you?
So we're going into number 7, but it's a wild card.
It's kind of on the side, and it's, yeah, so it could be any piece of kit, really.
So this is my hand luggage to get there.
Well, you know, you're the equivalent of the inanimate object.
Well, you see, there's... I have a little Omni Chord by Suzuki, but I'm not going to count that. It's great, but that's not the piece I'd want to take. Mm-hmm. I'd actually like to take something that isn't a synthesizer, and that is the Kimbara guitar, which is, it's actually Fresher who makes this guitar. And it's a guitar that's got effects and things all built in. It's very heavy, but that was one of my little car boot finds that I lovingly restored. And Jimmy Nolan, who used to play for James Brown, he had one of these guitars, and I just love it. It is, in a way, like a synth, because when you start playing about with the phases and things, that's all built in the actual guitar, you can get some pretty quirky sounds out of it. And because you can get a line level signal out of it, I can plug this into the 55 and play the guitar into the 55 and just do things that you wouldn't think you should be able to do, if that makes any sense.
It's an interesting choice. The previous interviewee, Mr. Mel Wesson, chose a Manson guitar to take with him. So a kind of almost a modern equivalent of the Kimbara, so with built-in effects and various bits and bobs. So
what's the Manson?
So it's the Matt Bellamy guitar with a built-in XY pad.
Yes, I know which one you mean. Yes, very good.
So a similar sort of vibe, I suppose, but just a more modern take on it. Although Manson guitars have been around for a very long time as well.
Yeah.
So when did you come across this particular Kimbara?
Well, this turned up about 2 years ago, and it was on one of the Cobboot sales that I like to and go and hunt around. And I'm not the world's greatest guitarist, but I was drawn towards it because I thought, that's got lots of buttons and turning knobs and things all over it. What is it? I purchased it, bought it home, and it had some severe problems in the electronics. The the battery had been left in there for 20 years. I think these are about 1976, 72 or 76, these guitars. But I think it probably had the original battery in it, which decided to leak all over the circuit boards. And it took a lot of cleaning up and swapping of wires and things. But because I put so much love and effort into bringing it together, it's one of those items that I will never get rid of. I will keep it. And besides, when I'm on the desert island and I've turned the 55 into a canoe, I've got a paddle.
And there you go. Perfect. So you're actually looking... I'd be happy on this island, though. I don't think I'd be making a... Maybe some company would be appropriate, but I don't know whether... I think I'd be quite happy with the selection. Yeah. So, yeah, still... There is quite a lot going on the Kimbara. There's over a dozen switches and controls on there. Was it a complete ground-up rebuild, or...?
No. It's basically from where the battery bay was. The alkaline had leaked across several circuit boards.
Mm-hmm.
And then looking around elsewhere, some of the solder joints wasn't too great. And I had to put fresh solder in. Some of the old equipment tends to suffer from what they call the dry solder joints. Mm-hmm. They dry up over time and things just don't connect anymore. And yeah, there was a lot of work, but... The thing just sings. It's my go-to guitar all the time now.
Great.
I mean, as you see, I've got several guitars around the house. But this is sort of my guitar.
That's the one.
Yes.
The one for you. Well, there you go. So the Kimbara guitar, the FS...
It's actually Fresher Strata, Japanese... And it's the FS1007. So I think actually Kimbara was maybe a company that Fresher made them some guitars. I think there was about 100,000 yen when they came out. They were not cheap. And I've never seen one come up on eBay. And there's not a lot of information out there about them. Apart from Jimmy Nolan used to play one.
Right. I have to maybe reach out to our friends at Guitar Nerd and see what they make of this thing.
Yeah.
Indeed. Well, there you go. Those are your desert island synths and your wild card. Just running through that again, the Moog Modular 55, the reissue, the Yamaha Montage, Arturia Matrix Brute, Roland System 8, ARP 2600, Korg Kronos, and the Kimbara Freshener FS1007, which is in danger of being used as a paddle.
Yes.
Indeed. Well, I like the definitely some lateral thinking going along there. So you've got the wood for a raft in the gorgeous walnut cabinet of the System 55 and a paddle in the Kimbara guitar there.
Yeah, I know.
If sounds only so. The System 8 battery powered, then you'd be set fair. You'd be able to take that with you. It's light.
Oh, that would be easy to do.
If you took the Matrix Brute or the Montage, you would definitely sink.
Yeah.
So, battery option on the next iteration, please, Roland.
Yes, on the System 16.
There you go. Well, this has been another edition of Desert Island Synths. So thank you to Mr. Marcus Fuller.
And thank you, Dan, from GAC.
A pleasure as always, and farewell.